It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to the 10 o'clock hour of Money Matters. Here on WSB Radio, we are full speed ahead here on a very chilly morning. It's 36 degrees on Peachtree. Hasn't really warmed up a whole lot. Showers for the first half of today with a high getting to 51. And then showers kind of go away throughout the afternoon. Lows tonight of 37. Just pretty nasty if you're going to be outside today like I am pretty much all day. It's going to be great. Tomorrow afternoon, showers. Looks like about a 70% chance, high of 47, lows of 39. So bundle up and get out a raincoat. I just remember back in the day, the coldest day that my dad would make me work outside was always the rainy day. It's at 35 degrees and rain was the worst day to put up a fence. And I swear he did that on purpose, just to get us out there. But I still remember so vividly how uncomfortable that working environment is. So as we head out and venture to the weekend, I hope to be able to give my boys the same experience this weekend of working outside in the cold, in the rain. There's just nothing like it. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. Weather brought to you by Shoemate, by the way. Wes Moss here every Sunday morning to take your calls and questions. We've been talking today about the Buffett odds of not just the perfect bracket, we've heard that before, but his new contest that says if you just get the first round of 32 right in the NCAA March Madness college basketball bracket, if you're a Berkshire employee, if you get it right, $1 million per year for life. Pretty amazing. By the way, we did the odds, Ryan and I, the exponential math. Remember, to the power. Ryan and I did the math on this thing. If you just to get the first round correct, it looks to be at about 1 in 4.3 billion to get the first round correct. A couple of years ago, there were a few folks that got 31 out of 32. So I think that's if the 1 out of 43 billion is really if it was a true coin flip. But because you get some easy games, 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, the odds are a little bit better than that. But still, 1 in 4 billion. Not a whole lot of worry that Warren Buffett's going to actually be paying out that $1 million per year for life. Also, jobs and the Fed, Trump and the GOP healthcare plan. Even more fun and more importantly, your calls and questions here on Money Matters. So give us a call, 404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. 1-800-WSB-TALK. We'll go to the phones. Hannah joins us on the line. Hannah, what's going on? Good morning from Morningside. That's in town.
That is in town.
That's so rare to get a call from my own neighborhood.
Yeah,
Where I would say I'm almost in Morningside. So
almost
in Morningside. I'm in the Morningside Elementary School District. I can tell you that much.
Oh, okay.
So what's going on? How can I help?
Okay. About 3 years ago, my husband and I hired a financial advisor. It's a big one here in Atlanta. And anyway, after about a year, we were unhappy because we'd been losing money. It's our retirement money. We're both retired. And so I called you, and you said you felt like it was fair to give somebody about 3 years. So we're at 3 years, and we're still losing money. And
so I told you you should give somebody 3 years. I think that sounds like good advice, but it turned out to be not so good, Hannah.
Well, I thought it was good advice. I thought it was fair, and we'll see how the market, like you said, go up and down and see what's going on. But anyway, they seem to churn a lot. So we were about upset with them and, you know, trying to figure out what they were doing. So the middle of February, they made like 12 more trades. So we had enough, and we just fired them.
Okay.
So now they had like a bunch of hedge funds and things. So now we can't figure out how to unwind. And we're kind of traumatized. And it's nothing personal, obviously, but we're not wanting to rush into hiring another advisor. So we're trying to find some way that somebody just charges hourly or just charges you a flat fee or something to unwind you out of the hedge funds and stuff, because I don't think it's as simple as selling them, because we looked at them, and a lot of them have, like, redemption fees, and a lot of them are, say, like, institutional clients only, existing clients only. And there's about 19 things, and we just were frozen. And we need to get out of it, because last week we lost about $10,000.
A couple of more questions before I give you another answer here,
okay,
Hannah. And I guess 3 years later, I appreciate you still staying in touch or calling back in 3 years.
Oh, we still like you. We listen to you all the time.
Well, thanks. The question I have here, usually hedge funds are a portion. What's the portion? Because I go back and I look at the... So let's just go back 3 years. If I go back to the beginning of 2014, just to give our audience some context here. If you're listening, Hannah's saying, hey, Wes, I gave these guys 3 years and it hasn't gone very well. I've been patient with it. And I think even more frustrating is that if you look at the general market, the market itself has done pretty well. Yet these alternative funds that you're in with XYZ, we'll just call it XYZ financial firm. We don't have to say who it is. It looks like they've made no money for you, and the market is up almost 30%. That's frustrating.
Correct.
And the S&P 500 in the last about 3 years caught up about 30%. If you look at the aggregate bond index, the price on the aggregate bond index, and I'm looking at Barclays has an ETF, AGG, which is mostly government bonds. The price on that is flat over the last 3 years, but it's paid about 2 to 3% per year in income. So at least you've made about 2 to 3% there. And then the international index is actually slightly lower. If you count dividends, it's probably about flat. So are you saying that what's the percentage in all these different products, or how much is it market based versus how much is in these alternative type hedge fund investments?
They have 33% of our money in the hedge funds, and on their website, you can go to their website and look, they had that we've made after their fees. They had that we've made 0.9% since the inception we've been with them.
So totally flat less than 1% gain in aggregate. For three straight years.
Correct.
And it's because do you have a third in the stock market, a third in bonds, and a third in these alternatives?
I'm guessing that, yeah, I think that's what it is. There's a lot of bond things on here.
So the alternatives, even though the stock side has probably done fine, these hedge funds have gone down, you're saying, in price, and that's just offset all your gains.
Correct. I mean, yeah, correct.
And now it's hard to unwind these things. Well, are they held at a big custodian? What is the custodian? Is it like a Schwab or Fidelity where these things are held?
Schwab.
It's Schwab. Mm-hmm. It is. You're right. You've got to be. If it's held at Schwab, it's not going to. I don't think it's going to be quite as difficult to unwind these. What I've found over the years, if you have a hedge fund or an alternative investment product at a big brokerage firm, let's say like a Merrill Lynch or UBS, very often it's very proprietary to that company. So it might be only them that has a selling agreement, and you have to almost get them to get you out of it. Because the money is at Schwab, from my experience, or what I would venture to say here, is that you probably don't need them. You definitely don't need them, let's put it that way. And you can call these companies directly and try to unwind them. The problem is, though, you probably have a window. They say, well, you can only redeem once a month or once every 3 months. Is that what they're telling you?
Well, we haven't called them. We haven't done anything. We just have been sitting on our hands since the middle of February, praying nothing's going to happen. But things have happened. Like I said last week, it was we got creamed.
Well, I would tell you that. Okay, so this is. I understand the position you're in. You're kind of back. You feel probably backed into a corner a little bit. You've got all this money tied up in all these different areas, and a huge chunk of it, a third of your retirement assets. You don't even know what they're in because they're these alternative funds.
Correct.
And it's not like you can pull up a Morningstar on some esoteric, not even esoteric, but a hedge fund. It's really difficult to find out what's underneath the hood. So here's what you have to do. Okay, first of all, understand that the big picture asset allocation. If in fact a third of this is in bonds or something really steady, you're probably not at risk that it's going to lose a lot of money. The equity side, obviously, is at risk on the stock market, obviously. You right. could potentially sell part of that because you're just trying to hedge yourself in risk because you don't know what's in the hedge funds. I would venture to say that a lot of times these hedge funds are, they're set up so they don't make a lot of money, but they also don't lose a lot either. So you're uh-huh. probably not at risk to have these things blow up or go down 20-30%. It doesn't see, my, as we're talking through this, it's probably not uh-huh. an imminent danger situation, which is good. So you guys don't
that's
have
what
to
we
get,
feel like.
Yeah, so you don't, you know, it's not an imminent danger situation, but I would say over the next couple of weeks, you want to figure it out. So what you have to do is go call the individual hedge funds or individual, you call Schwab, get them to get you obviously on the phone with the operations team at these particular investments that are somewhat esoteric and get a schedule on how you can get out of these things. It might be over the next month, you need to hit a window and you can get out of all of them. And that's probably your best, that you're going to have to do that because you don't understand what's in them. You can't just hold them. You got to get rid of them.
Right.
There's just no question about that. So that's a definite. And that is your next step here. I'm happy to give you, there are folks out there that will help you on an hourly basis. Uh-huh. They usually charge a certain kind of retainer. So you get, hey, well, you've got to at least do 10 or 20 hours a year. And uh-huh. I can send you a list of folks that do that. So why don't, so go onto my website, go to wesmoss.com, upper right-hand okay. corner, there's an envelope. That envelope is a contact button. The emails come straight to me and Ryan. Mm-hmm. And I'll send you a list of that grouping. And then okay. you can kind of, again, after that, that's probably your next plan once you make the phone calls to get out of these esoteric products that you don't understand. So that's your next okay. week, Hannah. And, okay. and we're happy to help. You are listening to Money Matters right here. Stay tuned. News, weather, traffic straight ahead. Then more of your calls and questions right here. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB.
Back to Wes Moss for the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. Let's go right to the phones. We're not wasting any time here on a Sunday morning. Where are we headed here? We're going to Steve, who joins us from Roswell. Steve, good morning. Welcome to the show. What's up? How can I help?
Hey, I had a question about closed-end funds. I own several of them in various accounts, IRA and after-tax money. And they all seem to pay between 8 and 11%. They pay a monthly income. And I just wanted to know if there was a downside to holding these funds. I know a lot of the returns you get are...
return of principal.
Return of income.
Return of principal. Because just as a distinction, I think a couple folks driving in the car on this kind of nasty day out in Atlanta, just their ears perked up. Did he just say 8 to 11% per year?
That's right.
Right? Did you just say 8 to 11? Yes, he did. Steve did, because that's what closed-end funds pay. They're going to pay for between 5 and 11% a year. But they don't necessarily, there's a nuance in this, and is they pay that out. They don't necessarily pay that. And there's two very different areas here. If you think about a stock that pays a 3 or 4, let's say a stock that pays a 4% dividend, and you have a closed-end, it actually pays you the 4%. If you were to have a closed-end fund where, again, inside the closed-end fund, the stock's paid a 4% dividend, but it pays out 7, it's actually having to pay out more than what the stocks inside are actually paying the fund itself. So you're getting a return of principal. Or if the assets go up, you're getting some of the capital appreciation. And that's what closed-end funds on the stock side, Steve, are trying to do. Do you own closed-end stock funds or closed-end bond funds?
Some of them are mixed. Some of them are high income. Some of them are convertibles. Some of them are bonds.
You know what? We're running short on time. I want you to hang on. We're going to get back to this question. We're going to keep everyone on hold. What do we do with closed-end funds that pay out these big percentages? More straight ahead on Money Matters, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB.
It It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. 37 degrees on Peachtree. Rain stopping. Looks like this afternoon, around noon. High of only 51 today. But the good thing is showers are going away. Lows tonight, 37. Tomorrow afternoon, showers again. High of only 47. Lows, 39. Weather brought to you by Shoemate. We have a call on hold about closed-end funds. We're going to get to that very briefly. Before we get to that, Ryan, we've got a prize pack. What is it?
The McDonald's weekend prize pack is a pair of tickets to see Boston in concert with special guest Joan Jett July 19th at Verizon Amphitheater, produced by Live Nation, and a pair of tickets to see Foreigner in concert with special guests Cheap Trick and Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Experience July 29th at Chastain Park Amphitheater, produced by Live Nation. This week's prize pack, which is pretty rockin', goes to caller number 11.
And by the way, the number 404-741-0750. Again, 404-741-0750. All right, let's go back to the phones here. We were talking to Steve, who joins us from Roswell. Steve, good morning. Welcome to the show. We're talking closed-end funds. So you had said, hey, I've got these closed-end funds paying 8 to 11%. They are stock or bond closed-end funds?
Both. Some of them are high income, some are convertibles, some are options, some are bonds.
And how much of your, Steve, how much of your portfolio in general is allocated to this particular vehicle?
Oh, maybe 5%.
So it's not a huge part of the overall pie, but an important piece of the pie nonetheless. Here's the deal.
Well, I've been thinking about increasing them. Just because, you know, it gives out a good monthly income.
They do. They do. It is a good vehicle. It can be a good vehicle for that. And again, we own closed-end funds for income. And think of, for those of you who do not own these closed-end funds, think of them just like they're similar to an ETF. It's a basket of securities. They could be anywhere, stocks that also have options inside or inside the closed-end fund, bonds, treasuries, high-yield bonds, convertible bonds, you name it. It's just a vehicle. But the vehicle, because of its structure, and it's a fixed share account, so the number of shares don't change. That's why it's called closed-end. They're not making any new shares. They can trade at premiums or discounts, but it's just a vehicle that allows the manager of the closed-end fund to do some things that they don't typically do in an ETF or a mutual fund. And part of that is that they can use leverage. So we've got to look at, and earlier Steve said, hey, these things are paying 11%. Well, what out there is really earning 11%? Well, nothing. Because that's such a high income, you're going to, these can be relatively aggressive or riskier components to the portfolio. You've got to look at what's called the distribution coverage, Steve. So you got to look on Closed End Fund Connect or CEFConnect.com and see, oh, this is paying out 65 cents a month or let's call it 10 cents a month. And it's producing 10 cents a month. Well, that's okay. If it's paying out 10 cents a month and it's producing five, then you've got a problem. And you have a closed-end fund that eventually will have to cut its distribution. On the distribution tab, by the way, when you're trying to measure these things, you've got to also look at something called the uni balance, UNNI or UNII, which is the undistributed net investment income. And if that's a negative number, that means the closed-end fund is running, the gas tank's running dry, and it's running out of what it can pay out to you without dramatically eating into the principal, which could lead to a distribution cut. So you've got to be careful about how much these things are actually earning or producing versus the income they're paying out to you. And you got to go through and look at your closed-end funds and make sure that you're not looking at an imminent distribution cut. The other thing with closed-end funds, Steve, is that they are the number one determinant over time of whether a particular closed-end fund does well or not has to do with its price whether it's a premium or a discount to what it's actually worth. So if you pull up a chart of closed-end fund, it'll show you its net asset value, the NAV, what the securities inside that fund are actually worth. But then you'll see another line, and that other line is its price. So if you're buying closed-end funds at a discount to the NAV, it's a good predictor that that closed-end fund can do well over time. If you're buying a closed-end fund and the price, and this happens very often in the space, that is greater than the NAV or greater than what it's worth, that's a bad sign for the future of that particular closed-end fund. So these are all the things that you've got to be careful about. Bottom line, though, is that closed-end funds are a tricky animal. You've got to really understand them, but just don't be fooled. And this is for everyone else out there listening. Don't be fooled when buying a closed-end fund, it says, oh, it pays out 9% a year. A lot of that can just be paying you back your own money. So you've got to be careful in understanding the difference between a dividend, which is an actual cash payment, versus a distribution that the closed-end fund pays, which is just a set amount that can come from lots of different places, including paying you back your own money. And that's an important discussion, because closed-end funds are one of the six asset classes that I really look at when it comes to generating portfolio income. So those six asset classes, by the way, are bonds, closed-end funds, preferred stocks, bonds, closed-end funds, REITs, income commodities, dividend-paying stocks, and then preferred stocks. Those are the six areas. Again, bonds, closed-end funds, REITs, income commodities, which can include pipeline companies, dividend-paying stocks, and then preferred stocks. It's those six asset classes that make up an overall income investing portfolio. And Steve's call is a good one, because it reminds us of that one important component that's a little trickier out of the group, and that's closed-end funds. Now, I want to get back to, we've got to get to jobs here today. I said we'd talk about jobs. We need to get to them. And we were talking for a lot of earlier in the show about a lighter topic, the odds of whether you win the NCAA bracket challenge or not from Warren Buffett. If you get first 32 right and you work for a Berkshire company, which is about 370,000 employees, you can enter a chance to win, I think, for free. If you get the first 32 games right in March Madness, if you get them perfect, the first round, it's $1 million per year for life. And we did the numbers and the probability. It's still pretty far out probability that actually works, and hence Buffett making this grand prize that he knows he's probably not going to have to pay out. Going from a light topic to a heavier topic here, jobs. We just had Jobs Friday as we wrapped up the week, and this is such a big part of what the Fed and the markets really hang on, and how the jobs number it helps us. It determines on how we feel as an economy. Hey, I heard that we just lost 150,000 jobs. That's bad for those 150,000 people, and it's bad for everybody else who worries that they might be next. Of course, right now, the reverse is true. We just added 235,000 jobs this past month, and you hear that, you maybe feel a little bit of optimism. And of course, the Fed is listening intently. So the jobs report is one of the primary data points that the Federal Reserve really picks apart. Remember the mandate of the Fed. It's not just to tick off politicians. That's not their mandate. Their mandate is to maximize a sustainable level of employment. Not maximize so that we bubble over, but maximize a sustainable level of employment and then keep prices stable, which basically means keep inflation in check, which means right now we're right around 2% a year with various inflation measures. So you go look at the last job report. Unemployment rate's now down to 4.7%. Labor force participation actually went up a little bit to 63%. As of the beginning of this month, the inflation measures that the Fed watches, which their primary data point is called PCE, personal consumption expenditures, that's at about 1.9%. The core rate, which excludes food and energy, is about 1.7. So we're pretty darn close. We're there. Right? They've got this dual mandate. The inflation number is where they want it. The jobs number is pretty much where they want it. Hence, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that the Fed's going to ratchet rates higher at their next meeting, which is coming up this week. The bond market already knows it. The bond market has told us that this was coming. We've seen the 10-year Treasury rate climb over the last several months, really since the election. Or if you go back to last summer, rates, the 10-year Treasury rate was 1.4%. Today, it's over 2.5%. So this is, and this is why we've been talking so much about this on the radio here on Money Matters, about managing the interest rate risk inside your portfolio. You still want bonds for safety, at least I believe that, and you want them for income. I still believe that. But it's, and so it's not time to abandon all bonds, but it's time to acknowledge that rates have bottomed and we're headed higher for here from here for probably a pretty long period of time. And if you're an income investor, you just need to make adjustments to what you hold on the bond side of the equation if you haven't already done so. Again, that means just the categories we just went over. We're looking at dividend paying companies as a big, it's going to be an even more important component of your income strategy. Shorter term bonds, floating rate bonds, adjustable bonds, adjustable rate bonds, higher yielding bonds, certain REITs are very good even in a rising rate environment. So there's plenty of income based investments that should be fine or even really or even thrive in an environment where rates climb. And that's really where we are in the cycle. There is, you, when you hear, oh, the Fed's probably going to raise rates, it's because the economic data tells them it's time to do so. And if you're paying attention to the economic data, it's at least today, it looks pretty black and white. We are at a place in the jobs market that is the job economy that has certainly gotten tremendously better. Yes, it could continue to get better. And yes, there are challenges to the job market, particularly in certain industries, but we're there. And that's why we know that the Fed, we don't know for sure, but highly, highly likely rates from the Fed, as far as they're concerned, they're headed higher. We also know inflation's where it needs to be. It's about 2%. We're not worried about deflation anymore, which is a good thing. And that means that, and we talked about this a couple of shows ago, what's the relationship between stocks and rates going up? We know that historically, as rates rise, so do stocks. So it's not necessarily a bad thing if interest rates are going up. It usually means the economy's getting better. However, at a certain point, high rates do start to kind of choke off the economy because now borrowing costs get so high that it slows everything down. We've got a long way to go before that happens. Historically, that number is around 4.5% to 5% before high interest rates start to choke off the economy. Today, we're around 2.5%. So we've got a ways to go higher. We've got a lot of room. There's a lot of room before we hit a ceiling where rates start to slow everything down. And that's the world that we live in today. We are quick news, weather, traffic. Then we'll come back for more Money Matters with me, Wes Moss. You can find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Email button upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the team. If you have questions about your own situation, we're happy to help you through that. Straight ahead, news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. NCAA bracket math, light topic, jobs, heavier topic. And then as we increase the heaviness theme, we're talking healthcare. And right now, so you heard plenty in the news this week. There's the new GOP plan when it comes to, what let's call it Ryan Care or Trump Care, whatever you want to call it. Still doesn't have a name yet. The new acronym, by the way, though, is A. So we're going from ACA, Affordable Care Act, to the AHCA. The American Healthcare Act. And the biggest changes to me were obviously, from what I can tell, we're doing away with the individual mandate. That's a big deal. And the repeal of ACA tax, the old tax increases from ACA, those are going to go away. And then there's this giant list of other things that are probably going to change. The biggest part, another big part that has to do with individual participation with health savings accounts, which we're going to talk more and more about over the next year if this proposal goes through, because you're going to be responsible for more of your healthcare costs, but the government will incentivize you to save more on a tax-free basis. So they're going to really, it looks like they're going to try to up the ante on how much you can put away on a pre-tax basis in an HSA, health savings account. So HSAs are going to become the new 401ks in the world, but particularly for your healthcare. And there's going to be tax credits, at least that's what they're debating. So the devil will be in the details right now. The initial proposal is to have tax credits between $2,000 and $14,000 a year to help pay for healthcare. We'll see how that shakes out. On the week, though, if you just look at the market reaction, here's a week where the Dow was down about 0.5%, the S&P 500 down about 0.4%. If I go through and look at different healthcare-related companies or ETFs that measure the healthcare industry, XLV, which is, again, the healthcare ETF, kind of the most broadest of healthcare ETFs, was down 0.25%. So it's actually down less than the rest of the market. The pharmaceutical ETFs that are, again, more based towards companies that are dealing with drug pricing, they fared a little bit worse, depending on which ETF you look at, down 0.5% to 1.5%. So the jury is obviously still very much out. The market's saying, look, this is either too soon to tell what the various impact will be on different subsectors, or we don't know exactly what's going to happen, or maybe it's more of a status quo for companies. We will obviously be covering this and trying to keep our... Let's put it this way. Stay tuned for healthcare impact on the market and your investments. Enjoy the rest of this Sunday. Thanks for tuning in to Money Matters. Find me and the team at westmoss.com. And stay tuned to News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.